Community Radio.
It's about real people.
Not sound bites.
Not more talking heads.
Not on this show.
Interchange is a community access media forum fostering unfiltered open dialogue on the people, issues, and events impacting life in South Central Indiana and beyond.
Conversations that challenge the ways we perceive the world around us.
Real people.
Real issues.
This is your forum.
This is Interchange.
Hello and welcome to Interchange. My name's Dave Stewart. Today is Tuesday, December 7th, 2010, and it is my great pleasure and honor to have as my guest today, Dr. Jill Bolte Taylor. Dr. Taylor, are you there?
I'm here. How are you?
I am just great. It's so nice to hear your voice. Let me say one thing to the radio audience. This interview is going to be done over the phone, so thank you so much for joining us over the phone.
You're welcome. I wish I could have been there in person.
Okay. Well, so let me give a little bit of lead up. So Dr. Jill Bolte Taylor, a Bloomington resident, best-selling New York Times author of the book My Stroke of Insight. Not only that, but I believe that the book is going to be turned into a movie. Am I right on that?
We're in the process of development right now.
Okay. And then in 2008, Time Magazine stated that Dr. Jill Bolte Taylor was one of the 100 most influential people in the world. So it is my great honor to have you on as Interchange, Dr. Jill Bolte Taylor.
Thanks, Dave.
Okay, well, let me start off with my first question. Now, I've read the book, My Stroke of Insight, and I'd like to talk about that. But in the book, My Stroke of Insight, you mention that you have gone through recovery. And while you were going through recovery, you listed some things that you thought were suggestions on how to treat people. And I thought that with the holidays coming up, with people seeing friends and family they might not have seen for a while, can we go over some of those points?
Sure.
So what is the most important thing in talking to somebody who's recovering? And I guess we're all recovering to some extent.
I think we are. You know, I think it's really important that we pay attention to the energy that we bring into any space. Are we feeling anxious? Are we feeling stressed? Are we feeling calm? Are we feeling peaceful? Are we feeling whatever it is? What energy are we projecting into the space around us? And then with a conscious awareness of how is that going to influence the situation and whatever's going on. So if you have someone who is ill, or you have someone who is has some type of physical wound or emotional wound this time of year even, paying attention to what is my influence, what is the energetic that I bring into the space.
Okay, so, and how can you do that, Dr. Jill Bolte Taylor?
Well, I think just simply by paying attention, I can tune into how am I feeling. If I'm feeling rushed, I know that. If I'm feeling anxious, I know that. If I'm feeling joyful and peaceful and loving and compassionate, I know that. And so I think it's the first step to any kind of experience is paying attention. What does this feel like inside of my body, and what energy am I bringing to this situation?
Okay, so, and then is there any physical things that you can do to enhance that sort of experience?
Well, if you're talking about how to interact with someone who is ill, I would pay very close attention to overstimulation. It was very important to me when I was first recovering from the stroke experience to show and to prove to the people who came to visit that I'm Jill, I'm in here, I'm okay. But those experiences were extremely draining on me energetically, and I, as a result of that, didn't have any energy left over for working. So I think it's a matter of paying attention to am I draining someone's energy? Am I feeding and fueling someone's energy? How's my energy? Am I getting enough sleep during the season?
Interesting. And in the book, you state like simple things such as look people in the eye and treat them as a person and things like that.
Absolutely. Remember that that whatever my condition, I'm a perfect and whole and beautiful being just as I am, and love me. I mean, ultimately, when we go to visit someone who is not well, the ultimate goal is to have it be a healthy exchange. And if you bring me your love and your calm and you hold my hand and you touch me appropriately and you get close to my face and you enunciate clearly, one of the biggest mistakes people make when they visit someone who has aphasia or they cannot understand language is that they raise their voice and they start to yell at the person as though they're deaf. And it wasn't that I was deaf, it was that I didn't understand you when you spoke. But if you came at me with that big energy, then that scared me away.
Well, I'm here with Dr. Jill Bolte-Taylor, and we're talking about how to treat people who are recovering. But when you mentioned, let's say somebody sees a relative that's elderly, then, mm-hmm. you know, if you talk to them and it doesn't seem to be getting through, the worst thing to do would be to start raising your voice and screaming at them, but you should concentrate more on the energy and try to make a connection. Am I right on that?
Yes, absolutely. What is my facial expression? What is my body language communicating? How much time am I coming in? You know, sometimes it's easier to go in for a 10-minute briefer real connection where you're actually expressing your feelings, you're being supportive, you're being soft and gentle, you're being a nice place for them to share an energy with you, as opposed to if you come in and you're stressed or you're angry or you know, you just don't know what you're going to talk about with me because I don't have language anymore, and you just talk, and you're spinning up all this energy, and then you get frustrated because I can't communicate and you want to finish my words. And it's not about that. It's about coming in and being with me. It's about coming in calmly and bringing me your love and bringing me that peacefulness.
That's just terrific. Let's do talk about the book, My Stroke of Insight. So it was a New York Times bestseller. When I've talked to people, Dr. Taylor, Dr. Jill Bolte-Taylor, when I've talked to people mentioning that I'm going to be able to interview you on WFHB, I was astounded by the number of people who had read your book. Can you give me like a brief synopsis of what this book is about?
Well, it's titled My Stroke of Insight because I had a major hemorrhage in the left half of my brain when I was 37 years old. And I was teaching and performing research at Harvard Medical School at the time, so neuroanatomy, brain anatomy, was my area of expertise when I experienced the stroke. Mm-hmm. So the book, the first section gives you a little synopsis of why I grew up to study the brain. And I grew up to study the brain because I have mental illness in my family. I have a family member diagnosed with schizophrenia. And I wanted to understand what's going on in the brain of someone who has that diagnosis as compared with the brains of individuals who would be diagnosed as normal control. So I was. So the first part of the book gives you the history before the morning of the stroke. And then on December 10, 1996, I woke up to this excruciating, pulsating pain behind my left eye. And so I take you moment by moment through the process of deterioration of my own left hemisphere, and all the way to the point where I could not walk, talk, read, write, or recall any of my life. And so if you ever wondered what it might be like to experience a stroke, it's a pretty profound account. And then the next section is about my recovery. Excuse me. I'm sorry.
No, that's fine.
But it was about what did I need and what did I not need in order to be able to recover. And this was a severe hemorrhage, and very few people recover 100%. So what did I know? What advantage did I have through the eyes of being a scientist whose expertise was the area of the brain in order to be able to help my own brain recover? And then the last section is, what did I learn? What did I learn through the eyes of a neuroscientist about my own brain, the way that it functioned before, the way that it now functions, and the relationships between different forms of circuitry? So the title, My Stroke of Insight, I kept asking myself, well, this wasn't a stroke of luck, and it wasn't a stroke of, what was it a stroke of? It was a stroke of insight through the eyes of a neuroscientist who really had the privilege of watching her own mind go through this process of deterioration and then the ability to recover it.
That's just fantastic. I got the book from the Monroe County Library. I read it in a day and a half, and I read it in a day and a half because I could not put it down. Your writing style is simply wonderful, and you explain so many huge concepts. I would recommend that book to anybody who is interested in the brain, and we all have one.
That's how I look at it.
Okay, so you raised some pretty big issues there, but the first one is this stroke of yours happened December 10th, about 14 years ago to the day. And when I asked some people what questions they would ask you, one of the questions that I was asked was, given the fact that you have had a stroke, given the fact that you, as you put in the book, spent 8 years of your life regaining your usage of the left-hand brain, and I guess later in the interview we can go through what the right-hand brain and the left-hand brain is, but given the fact that you had the stroke and you had the recovery, how has that affected your outlook on life now?
Well, I think that I have an incredible appreciation for the parts of my body that work.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't say that really in a glib way. I have appreciation that I can see and have a visual understanding of the world. I have an appreciation of my bladder capacity. I have an appreciation every morning when I wake up and I'm alive. I'm capable of being awake. I think that what it gave me was a real awareness of, I have all of these beautiful cells working together, and when I'm grateful for what they're doing and I pay attention to them and I celebrate them, I think they like that, personally. It's kind of the rally. It's the big mama's paying attention, and she's rallying together for our health and well-being. Most people don't have any appreciation for the fact that they have an ability until it's taken away by disease or some kind of trauma. So I think that's first of all, because that means I live my life with a sense of gratitude and celebration that I have this life and I have the ability to pick and choose how I want to be in the world. And I have the ability to take my own mind and move it into the past and think about something in the past. I can choose consciously to think about the future, or I can consciously choose to bring my mind to the present moment. And to me, that's incredible power, because what that means is the choices I make and where I put my mind influence how I'm going to be in the world and how I'm showing up. And that's really, I think, very different from who I used to be.
That's just astounding. So I'm here, this is Interchange. I'm here with Dr. Jill Bolte Taylor, author of My Stroke of Insight. So as you talk about that, and I vividly recall reading the passages in the book where you state that you've got an awareness of all the cells in your body and they're all working together and you're filled with joy. And I have to admit that when I read that book, it changed my life because it made me think, I can do this too.
Exactly.
Now let's...
That right there is why I wrote the book. I wrote the book because it was such a profound experience and insight into what I really am as a living being, not who am I in the world, what am I doing in the world, how do I define Jill Bolte Taylor. It wasn't about any of that. It was about, wow, I am the life force power of 50 trillion beautiful cells working together, and when they work together and I don't have to think about them, wow, you know, how magnificent and profound a concept that is. And this is what I am. I'm beaming the energy of what I am into the world, and I get to pick and choose what words I use, and I get to pick and choose where I go. and who I allow to influence me and who I don't. I'm not a plant that just sits and all the energetics and stimulation have to come to me. I have this incredible mind that allows me to move my body out into space where I pick and choose what's going on in my world. And I think we're just these absolutely amazing creatures.
This is an interview over the phone, Dr. Jill Bolte Taylor, and while you were saying that, I'm shaking my head affirmatively, saying yes. I mean, I agree with this. This is totally cool, and it's fun. And after reading the book, I was filled with a sense of joy. And I remember Catherine Domingo to set up the interview. She ended her emails with a statement, a quote that says, "You are responsible for the energy you bring to this space." And I believe that you mentioned that already in the interview, but it seems to me like that is almost the culmination of it. You're a thinking being, and you're responsible for the energy that you want to bring to the space.
You're responsible for what you project, and you also have the ability to say, "This energy coming at me, I like it. It works for me. I'm going to let it in." And there's other negative energies that I can look at and I can say, "That's not my stuff. I'm not going to absorb that. I'm just going to reflect that back. I'm going to offer love coming from me, even though hostility or anger might be coming toward me. I don't have to absorb that and reflect that as hostility or anger. I can just recognize, I'm aware you're not happy. But I have a choice, and I'm responsible for what I'm projecting back towards you."
Well, and as you say that, Dr. Jill Bolte Taylor, I'm reminded of in the book, like I believe when what you're talking about. So let's say like you're with somebody and they're projecting anger. You don't need to reflect that. You don't need to engage in that. But it's also in the book you mention, even if you have these feelings towards yourself, you have the right to choose whether or not you want to act on that.
Exactly. We have say, when you think about what we are, if we are this collection of beautiful cells, which cells are running and which cells do we want to run? And we can tell that based on, I have circuitry. My cells communicate with one another in circuits. So when I'm experiencing anger, I'm actually running my anger circuitry. Do I have say in whether or not that circuitry is going to run or not? Absolutely. I absolutely do. You absolutely do. When I'm joyful, can I like poop my own party in a minute and decide I'm not going to be happy? Absolutely. I have the power to do that because what I think is stimulates circuitry of what I feel. And what I feel stimulates circuitry of what physiology gets dumped into my bloodstream, and ultimately what physiological response and reaction am I going to have based on the input of my thoughts and my emotions. So it's a matter of realizing, first of all, I'm this incredible collection of cells. They communicate with one another in these circuits. Which circuits am I running, and how do I feel about those circuits running inside of my body? Do I want more of that, or do I want less of that? If I want more of it, then all I have to do is keep thinking the same thoughts that stimulate the emotional circuitry. If I want less of that, I can stop thinking the thoughts that stimulate that emotional circuitry. So if I'm angry, all I have to do is stop thinking the thoughts that are stimulating me and reminding me that I'm angry so that the physiological response stops.
This is great, and I remember in the book, and we're getting ready to go to our break, but I remember in the book you say that you take a moment of time and you give it like 90 seconds or something like that to let it run its course, and then you say, enough.
It takes less than 90 seconds for me to think a thought that's going to stimulate an emotional circuitry that's going to have a physiological dumpage of some molecule into my bloodstream, flush through me, flush out of me, and then it's gone. It's less than 90 seconds.
Okay, so we have the power over. Okay, so we're going to move to our first break, and when we come back, I'm going to continue talking with Dr. Jill Bolte Taylor.
Support for WFHB comes from Stafford Law Office, LLC, handling all types of family law and now offering collaborative law, a divorce process based on mutual respect where both parties agree in advance to resolve their issues through a mutually agreeable settlement without going to court. GLBTQI clients are welcome. For an initial consultation, Stafford Law Office is available at 339-6055 or on the web at cstaffordlaw.com.
All right, welcome back to Interchange. My name's Dave Stewart. I'm on a phone conversation interview with Dr. Jill Bolte-Taylor of Bloomington. Dr. Jill Bolte-Taylor, are you still there?
I'm right here.
All right. So we, at the end of the conversation, we were talking about how people, all of us, can be in control of our thoughts. Now, when we're talking about thoughts, we're talking about the brain. And when we're talking about the brain, there's a science that studies the brain that's called neuroscience, I believe. And yeah. you are a neuroscientist. Can you give me and the listening audience an idea of your expertise on what the brain is?
In general?
Well, I guess in general.
Would you like some specific?
Well, how about my first question? What percent of the brain do we use?
I'm a believer that we use all of our brain.
Oh.
If there's a neuron in your brain, then it's alive and it's communicating in a circuit. The myth that says we use less than 10% of our brain, that just is not supported by reality. The thing about neurons, the primary brain cell of the nervous system, is that when they're stimulated, they thrive, and when they're not stimulated, they die.
Mm-hmm.
So if it's alive and it's in your head, you're using it, we just don't have enough of a perception of the complexity of what they're doing in order to be able to clearly define the function cell by cell for us to understand it.
Okay, so following up on that thought, it seems to me like if you have a neuron in your brain, then it's being used in some capacity, and I believe you were saying that if you use it in a certain way, it's being used. If you don't use it in a certain way, it's being used, but it's not affecting your thoughts or something like that. But I'm thinking about exercise. Anybody that's run any length of distance or swam in a pool for any sort of distance knows that the first time you try to do that activity, it's incredibly hard, but there's a learning curve and things get easier. Is your brain sort of like that, or is that a muscle thing and not a neuron thing?
No, it's definitely a neuronal thing. It's kind of like the first time I speak with you is now. And so you and I are, we don't know much about one another. We don't have certain subjects that we always, whenever we meet one another, because we've never met before, we don't have a lot of common territory. But the more you and I communicate with one another, then the more aware we become and the easier it is for us to communicate with one another, because now our contact is strengthened and our connection. The same thing is true for neurons. So when you first start out doing something, like learning how to play a piano, Learning how to play a piano takes two hands, so it's very different. Both hemispheres are in action. Both hands are doing different things. And in the beginning, your brain might be going, okay, move this finger, move that finger, get a little rhythm in there, do this at the same time. And I might be going, oh, my God, this is like the hardest thing in the world to learn how to do. But the next day I sit down and I do it a little more, and the next day I sit down and I do it a little more. And generally the process starts getting a little bit better because the neurons are making better connections. They know what they're trying to do. Their level of communication is getting better, and their ability to control and manipulate not just my mind, because it's got to get rid of the, oh my God, I'm really terrible at this. I should never even have tried doing this. I'm wasting my time. I'm wasting my money. Those poor, my family has to listen to the garbage coming out of my hands. Will it ever get better? You know, so it's got to shut down some circuitry. And then it also has to connect to the muscles and to calm the body and to get my entire body to work together as a unit. And that takes time. And the time is circuits being built.
Okay, now, so I'm here with Dr. Jill Bolte Taylor. We're talking about circuits being built, and let's talk about the brain itself. You're a neuroscientist, and the brain, you know, we have neurons in it, but also we have a left-hand side of the brain and a right-hand side of the brain, and then we have something that goes between the two connecting it. Can you give kind of just a brief overview of just basic understanding of what the brain is?
The brain is made up of two hemispheres, two major collections of neurons. They are completely separate from one another in that they do not share any cell bodies. So the neuronal cell bodies are located either in one hemisphere or in the other hemisphere. However, they have a process called the axon. And the axon is the portion of the neuron that it communicates with its target tissue. So you do have a major highway for information transfer between the two hemispheres called the corpus callosum. So the right hemisphere is a collection of cells, and it's pretty much processing information about the present moment experience right here, right now. So if you're willing to bring your mind to the right here, right now, pay attention to what are your eyes actually seeing? What are the colors that you're seeing? What's the scheme of things? What's the energetic of what's going on? But you're right here, right now. When it comes to language, it does have language, but it's the bigger picture of language. It's not listening to the detailed words or putting meaning on those sounds, but it's picturing what is the intonation of my voice? What emotion am I communicating based on just the sounds of my voice? So the right hemisphere does all these specific things, but it's looking at the present moment and the big picture collage of all the information coming in right here, right now.
Okay.
The left hemisphere then takes that big picture information, all that data, and starts breaking it down and categorizing it and organizing it so that we can communicate about it with language. So that's where our language center is. My ability to create a sound, dog, dog, dog is a sound that I'm able to create because of neurons in my left brain. But your brain then places a picture on that sound, dog, and that picture that comes through is a right hemisphere experience, or your brain might say a specific dog you know, a detail. So you might talk about a specific category of a dog or a specific category of dogs or a specific dog that you know. So the left hemisphere can then look linearly over time. It has sequencing. It understands that there's a method to things. You have to put your socks on before you put your shoes on. You know that because you have a left brain that understands linearity of time. In addition to that linearity of time, you end up having a past. I can consciously put my mind on something that I did yesterday. I can reconsider, what did I have for lunch yesterday? I can understand the concept of yesterday, and I can understand the concept of tomorrow. So the two hemispheres work together differently. One, the big picture, thinking in pictures. The other, the details, the language, the linearity of thought.
This is simply fascinating. I'm here with Dr. Jill Bolte Taylor, and while you were telling me, or Dr. Bolte Taylor, and telling the audience to think about what you're seeing, I actually looked, and I'm looking at my calendar book. I looked at the brown color, and it was fun. I was filled with a sense of, I would say, joy, because I was thinking just in the moment, mm-hmm. and things were good. And now, so let's go, we're going to continue this discussion about the brain, but let's go to your experience when you had a stroke and blood flooded over the left-hand side of your brain, mm-hmm. rendering it incapacitated, I believe.
It was.
So, but when you
it
just...
It was very exciting. The hemorrhage, my hemorrhage, it was caused by a malformation in the blood vessels in my brain. I had an artery directly connected to a vein. And usually you have an artery connected to a vein with a little capillary network in between. Mm-hmm. And the capillary network acts like a buffer system between the high-pressure artery system and the low-pressure venous system. So I didn't have the capillary bed, and the vein couldn't take the pressure anymore, and it popped off. And when it popped off, the blood from the artery started to just spew into my brain tissue. And the thing about blood and neurons is that it is toxic to them, and it incapacitates them. Neurons communicate with one another through both a chemical means and an electrical means. And essentially, when the blood goes in there, it takes away the molecular components surrounding those neurons in order for those neurons to be able to generate their electrical phenomenon, and so they cannot communicate. And so that's what happened in my left brain, and it happened right around my language centers. So I lost the ability to speak. I lost the ability to understand language. I actually had my mind went totally silent. It's normal for us to be able to hear our own thoughts, to hear my brain say to me, hey, I need to pick up bananas when I come home because I'm out and I need them for breakfast. Another part of it is when I lost my language center, I lost the part of my brain that said, I am Jill Bolte Taylor. Wow. I like red. I do this. I'm a neuroanatomist for a living. All the details of Jill Bolte Taylor, they got swept away when the language center that tells me who I am and what I am and where I live and what my phone number is all went silent. And so those things were still true for me, technically, but I didn't have any of the information anymore. And so when my language center went offline, I lost the capacity to understand, I am Jill Bolte Taylor, this is the data about me that was missing. And in the absence of that little chatter that kept me abreast of my life, I shifted into a total experience of the right here, right now, present moment experience. And for me, in that silence, it was a sense of euphoria.
That's very interesting because the book is that you wrote, Dr. Jill Bolte Taylor, is called My Stroke of Insight. And I was going to ask, was it painful? But I know the answer. It was not painful because you felt euphoria. You were at one with the universe.
I did. I was. I lost the group of cells in my left brain. There's a group of cells called the orientation association area, and it's kind of in the upper back portion on the left side of your head. And that group of cells creates a holographic image of my body inside of my brain. So if you're in a safe place, close your eyes and don't wiggle anything. But close your eyes and just think, what is the orientation of my left foot? What is the position of my left foot? And then open your eyes and look at your left foot and see if you got it right.
I did.
A lot of people can't do that because those cells don't function well, and they don't have a clear definition of where their body begins and where it ends and what is the position of that body in space. So in the absence of that group of cells, I had no definition of the body, of my body. Where did I begin and where I ended? Was that my arm? Was that my leg? I didn't even know what an arm and a leg were, much less did they belong to me. And in the absence of that definition, I felt that I was this enormous ball of energy just blended with all the energy around. So I describe it as feeling that I was as big as the universe.
It's very interesting to think about. And then I guess the next question is, well, you know, if you felt that you were a part of the universe, a big ball of energy existing in the universe, which, who knows, it might be what we are, right? I think maybe there is a certain something. But the point is, you worked to regain the left-hand side of the body, and I wonder why.
Why did I come back?
Sure.
Well, I realized that I was very healthy. I've always been a movement nut. I love exercise. I take care of my body. My body, I had a strong body. And even though I had this mind that was now completely severed from normal conscious ability to communicate with the external world, I had this sense of awareness that, you know, I was perfect and whole and beautiful in the same, in the condition that I was in. And why did I choose to come back? I came back because, first, I knew that my body would live for a long time in this condition. Mm-hmm. And if I pictured a world filled with people who knew that they could consciously choose to shut down that brain chatter of their left minds. And in the absence of that brain chatter, which takes them into their past pain and their future fears and brings them into the present moment experience, I pictured a world filled with people who knew that they could consciously choose that deep inner peace of the right hemisphere. And I thought, wow, what a world that would be if people knew that they could come here and they chose to consciously do that. And I realized, you know, whether my body lives for another day or another 50 years, that's all the time I'm going to have in this form. And if I have the capacity to get better and to help just one person realize that peace is just a thought away, then it was worth every effort that I would have to go through in order to try to recover my mind.
This is just totally cool. This is Interchange. I am with Dr. Jill Bolte Taylor, author of the book My Stroke of Insight. And now we're going to go into the last and final break. And when we come back, I look forward to continue talking with you, Dr. Jill Bolte Taylor.
Support for WFHB comes from Bloom Magazine, a proud supporter of WFHB. In the December-January issue of Bloom Magazine, 16 pages of pictures taken by readers and reflections by a sports writer by Chris Corman, former sports editor of the Herald Times. Bloom Magazine is available at more than 200 local businesses. More information is available at magbloom.com.
Welcome back to Interchange. My name is Dave Stewart. I'm feeling full of energy. I'm really enjoying this interview. I'm with Dr. Jill Bolte Taylor, author of My Stroke of Insight. And anybody who's listening to this interview, if you have enjoyed it and might want to share it with somebody else, you can go to the website www.wfhb.org and type in Dr. Jill Taylor in the search engine, and you'll find this link, and you can send it over. So, Dr. Jill Bolte Taylor, I hope you're still there.
I'm still here, Dave.
All right. Now, let's go back to right before the break when you said an extraordinary statement. You said you imagined a world where people could get in touch with the right-hand side of their brain and kind of know that they were in control of their emotions, and you said, I believe I'm quoting right, but you said that everybody is one thought away from inner peace.
Yeah.
What do you mean by that?
Well, you know, when you're not feeling peaceful, when you're feeling stressed or you're feeling angry, when you're feeling whatever it is you're feeling, I always encourage people to pay attention to your thoughts. And you can virtually always trace back your emotional circuitry connected to what it is I'm thinking. I mean, I can choose right here, right now, to think of something that can devastate me and move me into incredible sadness. I have that capacity to choose to think something like that. I can think of something that brings me joy. I can choose to think that thought just as easily as I can choose to think something that inevitably is going to make me angry. I have that capacity. We all do. What I believe is that the more time we spend paying attention to the thoughts, as soon as you feel yourself be thinking something angry, I'm feeling angry, okay, what am I thinking? As soon as you make that decision to pay attention to what it is that I'm thinking, then I take one step away from feeling anger, and it essentially takes away the trigger. Because now I'm observing instead of engaging with my experience of anger. So I believe that we have the capacity to choose a peaceful thought, something that brings us peace, something where we know we feel flooded with love, we feel open with compassion, we feel joy in our hearts, we feel grateful, gratitude, and celebration of life. We have that choice. So when I say peace is just a thought away, I truly believe that. We have the capacity to pick and choose what thoughts are going through our minds, what emotional circuits those are stimulating, which ones we're running, and if we're running something that we don't want to run, then we have the capacity to choose a different one by consciously choosing to shift what we're thinking about.
And so in the book, there was a statement when you were talking about the fact that the world is made up of atoms, and then, you know, the brain is made up of neurons. I mean, you basically laid out a pretty good picture of what reality is. But then you also made a statement, and I can't remember whether I've got it right or wrong, but you said essentially, biologically, we are, and it was either thinking beings who can feel or we're feeling beings who can think.
Yes.
Which one is it?
We are feeling creatures who think. Mm-hmm. When you look at the brain and you look at the mammalian brain and the development of the mammalian brain over time, the first circuitries that take form when we're born are our emotional circuitry, made up of what we call the limbic system.
Right when we're born?
And so when we're born, we have all these cells that are in our brain, but they're not all connected to one another until they become stimulated and over time then create circuitry based on the thoughts that we're thinking and the emotions that we're experiencing. So we are feeling creatures, biologically programmed. We are feeling creatures who think rather than being thinking creatures who feel. And when you pay attention to what is actually going on in the limbic system, over time, the limbic system is set up for, let's say, X number of emotions. And just to put a number on that, let's say we're capable of experiencing 10 emotions. It's probably more than that if we know how to label them, but it all boils down then to label and definition and who's who and who's thinking it and blah, blah, blah. But anyway, so if I'm only capable of 10 emotions, but I'm capable of 10,000 thoughts, then maybe 1,000 thoughts that I have are going to stimulate one of my emotional circuits. So those essentially become the triggers for my emotional circuitry. And I believe that that's what happens with us. We have extremely complex thought processes. And so let's say in my establishment of my 10 emotional circuits, my frustration circuit got established because when I was an infant, I cried and somebody didn't come and take care of my needs. Mm-hmm. And so I got frustrated and exasperated. And that circuitry took hold. And then as I grow up and I have lots of different relationships in my life, I have the ability to experience frustration and exasperation because somebody now does something that I allow to jump on the trigger of my circuit where I'm going to feel and run the circuit now feeling frustrated and exasperated. But they don't have anything to do really with my feeling exasperated. They just happen to jump on the trigger of my circuitry. So you cannot make me angry. You cannot make me feel frustrated or exasperated. You cannot make me happy. I have that circuitry, and things out there stimulate the and trigger the circuitry that I have, but ultimately I have the say in whether or not I'm going to let you trigger that or not. But I have to be willing to take responsibility for that, and that's a big but.
Well, yeah, I'm here with Dr. Jill Bolte Taylor, author of My Stroke of Insight. You say that's a big condition. I believe that the person has to take responsibility. I believe that's what you said. But you also have to be able to think, right? I mean, the circuits have to work. You have to be able to objectively reason this.
Well, you don't really, I don't think, have to objectively reason it. I think you have to make a decision.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the left brain wants to objectively reason it all,
mm-hmm.
but really the right brain just wants to feel better, or the right brain is hooked into the hostility. I mean, that's part of the beauty of what we are, is that we have these two hemispheres that have really very different personalities because they think about things in very different ways, and they're very different parts of who we are. And, you know, fortunately, the right brain would rather be happy than right. The left brain, on the other hand, which is good at rationalizing, good at arguing, good at criticizing, would rather be right than happy. And isn't it profound that we each have one of each of these inside of our own heads? And so our first relationship, and I believe the most important relationship of our lives, is the relationship between our own left and right hemispheres inside of our brains and how we navigate that relationship.
Well, that's something to think about. That's a huge thought. Well, when you say that the most important relationship is the relationship between your left-hand side of the brain and the right-hand side of the brain, well, I guess what I was going at with my last question is, let's say that you're completely and utterly drunk or intoxicated. That's not working or really medicated to the point where you can't think. I mean, how does that relate to the...
Well, you do have to have some clarity in there. And if you've got alcohol or drugs in the mix, then neither the right hemisphere nor the left hemisphere can show up because there's something going on. So you're right. You do need to have the ability to experience some clarity.
Clarity. And then as you experience clarity, then I believe that what you're saying, Dr. Jill Bolte Taylor, is that fundamentally our right-hand side of the brain wants to say, I'm thankful for life. Am I right? Do I have that right?
There's gratitude. There's celebration. There's joy.
Mm-hmm. Like when you, in the book, you give, if you say, if I could, I'm talking about you saying this and you writing this, you said, if you could assign tasks to the left-hand side of the brain and to the right-hand side of the brain, words that would delineate those tasks, your task for the left-hand side of the brain would be, well, actually, let's start with the right-hand side. Your task for the right-hand side of the brain would be joy, and your task for the left-hand side of the brain would be compassion.
Well, I don't think there's a task for the right hemisphere because I think it does it automatically.
Cool.
I think the right hemisphere, I see it as the right hemisphere is the blue skies. There's always a blue sky. Somebody profound said this. I'm not making this up. I just don't remember who. I apologize for that. But the sky is always blue. And then the clouds come in. And then we have gray skies, or we have rainy clouds, or we have whatever kinds of clouds. But the left brain masks the experience of the joy of the right hemisphere. The right hemisphere is always there. It's always joyful. It's always available to be joyful. And I'm not going to say joyful. I'm going to say peaceful.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's a difference between experiencing joy and experiencing peace. When I'm experiencing joy, I'm having actually a positive emotion. When I'm experiencing peace, I'm at rest and I feel fine. There's nothing disturbing me. And there's kind of this neutrality that just allows me to be pure and innocent in the moment, with a celebration that I exist. The left hemisphere, what would its task be? I would say its task should be, what did you say it was?
Compassion is what you wrote in the book, My Stroke of Insight.
I thought that was a good answer.
So,
compassion, because the left hemisphere is designed to critically analyze anything, which means it's looking for differences, and it's placing judgments on what is right and what is wrong and what is good and what is bad. So it has a tendency to not be very tolerant, and it's going to define the way things should be. And I do believe that the task of the left brain should be compassion.
That's really nice. When we talk about thoughts like peace and compassion, we're entering into the realm of spirituality. And William Morris, the producer of Interchange, wanted me to ask you, in your life, was there anybody that gave you a start on the understanding of spirituality?
Oh, well, I would definitely have to say Hal Taylor. Hal Taylor, he's local. That's my dad. And, Papa is 100% committed to social justice. He's all about helping people who are not as fortunate, helping them find their way, trying to provide resources. He believes in therapeutic justice as opposed to punishment of individuals, and really being compassionate in understanding this person was born into this environment. He ended up with this type of circuitry. This circuitry results in this kind of emotion, this kind of behavior, and this kind of behavior results in this kind of consequence in our society. And so how can we take this person who wasn't given all the options and all the opportunities, or for some reason the circuitry has skewed the past so that someone ends up not thriving in our society, and how can we help influence that person now so that they can thrive and have a healthy neurocircuitry? Because the bottom line is it's going to boil down for me to the neurocircuitry. And yet that, of course, can be in our society. Papa was an Episcopalian minister while I was growing up in Terre Haute. So I was brought up in the context of how does a church serve its constituency, its people, in a positive and healthy way in order to help those individuals grow up to be stronger, healthier members of society.
Well, that's really nice. And Dr. Jill Taylor, since you mentioned your dad, I'm going to ask you to mention your mom as well, because I believe your mother was the one that was instrumental in your care as you were recovering from this stroke, the 8 years of regaining your left-hand brain. Am I right on that?
Yes. My mama, Gigi Taylor, she lives in Terre Haute. And there's no question in my mind that I would not be here talking to you today if my mom had not just dropped her life in Indiana and come out to Boston when I had the hemorrhage. And she took over everything. She realized that I was an infant in a woman's body. I could not walk, talk, read, write, or recall any of my life. And she started from the beginning with me. We went through major brain surgery 2.5 weeks after the stroke, and then she taught me language again. She taught me how to walk and how to speak and how to use a fork and everything. She just really, I wouldn't be here again. So I feel very blessed to come from the family I come from.
It sounds like you had great support from your family, and by extension, that you're kind of recommending that we should have great support for others as well.
You know, I think that one of the greatest gifts that my family has given me and that I try to give to my family in return is we support one another for who we are. We love one another. We may disagree. We agree to disagree with one another. But we love one another and we support one another for who we are in the world. And we allow ourselves to be who we are. You know, I have mental illness in my family. And when someone in your family is experiencing delusions and hallucinations, you have the choice of getting mad at them because they're not treating you the way you want to be treated or you feel you deserve to be treated with a big left brain, you know, judgment. Or you can open the heart of your right hemisphere consciousness and say, you know, this person has circuitry that is resulting in hallucination and delusion. This is not by choice. This is not due to my choice or someone's choice to use drugs or to use alcohol in order to have this behavior. This is a tragedy. And how can I be supportive of my family members? How can they support me? And, you know, the bottom line is when push comes to shove at the end of the day, we love each other in spite of ourselves.
What do you mean by in spite of ourselves?
Well, we don't always agree with one another. You know, I adore my mother to pieces, but my mother is still my mother. And my father is still my father, and we're going to disagree on certain things, and yet we don't focus on the differences. We don't focus on the things that could drive us apart. And that's always a choice. Do you focus in your relationships on things that drive you apart, or do you focus on the things that at the end of the day warm your heart and bring you back together again with a sense of love?
Well, that's just so nice, and I guess we could end the interview, but I'm not going to because we have 1 minute left. So I'm here with Dr. Jill Bolte Taylor, and the person that recommended me to do this interview was Mike O'Connell, head tennis pro of the IU Tennis Center. Are you enjoying playing tennis, Dr. Jill Bolte Taylor?
You know, when I turned 50, I decided it was really important that I stimulate my neurons. And so I was a tennis player when I was in high school, and I'm loving taking lessons from Coach Mike. And I'm also learning how to play the piano. So my neurons are getting a heck of a workout post-50.
That's just great. Okay, I'm going to wrap it up now. Dr. Jill Bolte Taylor, T-A-Y-L-O-R, author of the book My Stroke of Insight, thank you so much for being my guest today on Interchange.
Thanks, Dave. I appreciate it.
Okay, Interchange is produced by William Morris. The assistant director is Shane, or the engineer is Shane Young. Chad Carruthers is the news director of WFHB, and everybody came together to put on this interview over the phone with Dr. Jill Bolte Taylor. And please hang around for Jazz with House of Jazz with my friend Tillman coming up right now.
Real people.
Real issues.
This is your forum.
This is Interchange.
Written and produced entirely by volunteers working in the studios of Community Radio WFHB in Bloomington, Indiana.
Interchange fosters unfiltered open dialogue on the people, issues, and events impacting life in South Central Indiana and beyond.
Comments, suggestions, and program ideas may be sent directly to the Interchange staff.
The email address is news@wfhb.org.
That address once again is news@wfhb.org.